like some of my favorite conversations I've ever had, you know, in the last, you know, 4 to 5 years of just being pretty much just totally immersed in hunting and in the hunting community is just like the conversations you and I have had about just like how hunting really is a true form of worship. And that it can take so many different forms. You know, there's like the communal aspect.
Welcome to the Life Outdoors Podcast. Our mission is to educate, entertain, and motivate. We speak life into and through the outdoors. Now join your hosts, Nate Bailey and Gage Bailey, as we navigate through the mountains of this life. Have you been sitting on the couch? Are you in the kind of elk hunting shape that you want to be in? Or maybe you were never in the shape last year and it just carried over to this year like me. Well, the Life Outdoors is going to do something to change that. We have put on the Rut Ready Ruck March to both help you get up and motivate you to get out and get ready for elk season, but also as a fundraiser for the Life Outdoors so we could get more people outdoors this year. The way it works is it's kind of like a walkathon. So you'll go around, ask your family, friends to sponsor your miles. And what you'll do is you'll keep track of the miles that you walk on some kind of app. It doesn't matter which one. I don't care. You could use, you know, Onyx. You could use Strava. You could use anything. But for the month of June, you'll have to put on 50 miles. And if you do that and then you raise $50 from your sponsors, you'll get a t-shirt from us. It's a cool t-shirt. And you'll also be entered into a drawing of all sorts of great prizes. Some of them from Worksharp, from Lacrosse Boots, from Ready Pack, and all these great sponsors that are helping us with this march, Ruck March. So, all you got to do is go over to thelifeoutdoors.org, and that's thelifeoutdoors with a Z on the end.org. And sign up. And once you signed up, once June rolls around, you just start keep tracking your ruck march. Now, one thing I have to add here is, guys, you have to have at least 40 pounds in your pack, and gals, you have to have at least 30 pounds in your pack. So once you register, you'll be a part of the group, and I'll probably create a Facebook page to follow this or something like that so we could follow each other and keep encouraging each other. But please join us. It's going to be a great time. I'm sure it's going to help our elk seasons, and it'll help get more people knowing who God is through the outdoors. Welcome to another edition of the Life Outdoors Podcast. And today we have with us Luke Dusenberry, somebody who I've known for a little while. Hey, how you doing, Luke?
I'm doing well, Nate. And yeah, I would say definitely a little while.
I think maybe my son helped break both of your arms at one time.
Oh, I think help is a loose term. I think a witness is not a loose term. He may have been an accomplice in that act.
I don't know if you remember that, and probably a lot of people who know you, Luke, don't know about that.
Yeah, only the friends who go back to eighth grade know that story. But yeah, I've known you since fourth grade, I think.
Yeah, it's been that long. I'm pretty sure that's when we met each other. I think I was Sunday school teacher, and I think it was the fourth grade. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah, you were my youth pastor for many, many years growing up, and then now great friend and still a mentor to me all these years later. And like I said, I just can't thank you enough for having me on, Nate, and also just for the relationships that we've been able to, you know, still dig deep and wrestle with and have amazing memories still today. Like now, you know, going from youth group days through high school, junior high, elementary school, but now into like going hunting, taking buddies hunting. It's just been awesome, man.
Right. Now I'm asking you things and, you know, getting your opinions on things. And it's funny how that circle just works, you know, it's just funny how that works. I do the same with the kids too, you know, with Gage and those guys. Is now it's a lot of, now that you move into manhood, there's things that I need to learn from you guys. So it's pretty fun. I really enjoy this younger generation coming up. You guys got a lot to offer.
I hope so. I hope so. But no, yeah, 100%, Nate. Like I said, it's a two-way street, and yeah, it's just cool to kind of like have our relationship just continue to evolve and really just turn into like a brotherhood.
Yes. Yeah, it's really, it is cool. We got to hunt elk together in 2022, I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then we hunted spring bears together, I think the same year. And yeah, it's pretty interesting to be able to go out in the woods. And you know, when you're younger, we talked a lot about hunting, and your parents hunted and you hunted quite a bit, and it's pretty neat to see that go full circle. And it's really surprising. I can remember when you were in college and we'd follow you on Facebook, and a lot of what you were doing in college was kind of moves to what your job is now. And it started, well, I don't need to tell the story. I need you to tell the story, but we started checking out what you were doing on Facebook, and you were like this, I was living vicariously through you because you found every place in Oregon that was out of the way that you could go check out. And then you started, filming it. How did that all start?
Yeah, in college, I got kind of obsessed, obviously with like photography and stuff, but also just like, you know, just trying to find like kind of places more off the beaten path. Some were on the beaten path. They were just, you know, beautiful sights of nature and stuff. But yeah, I just like kind of found like a newfound love of not like going places and going on adventures, but like, you know, trying to capture those with a camera. Or when I first started out, it was really just a simple GoPro action camera, but you know, just taking friends on hikes and lake days and stuff like that. Or, you know, and then it really kind of went like full circle, and I just went full tilt into like, okay, like I want to try and find places that like maybe some people don't know about, you know, on like all trails or things like that. And so I got really into like just obscure old maps, looking for like old waterfalls or unnamed waterfalls. Like I got really into like waterfalls, and I think that was just mainly because I grew up in Oregon and went to college up in Northern Oregon, where there's just, you know, hundreds and hundreds of them. So I joined like forums and all this stuff, would spend hours on Google Earth, you know, trying to like pick apart canyons and be like, oh, I think there'd be like a sick waterfall bit here based on like the contours and all this stuff. And like, it honestly was like a great groundwork for like e-scouting for like elk and deer, you know what I mean? Like, so I learned a lot. And like, obviously my dad, he's like a civil engineer surveyor. So I learned from a very young age, like how to read maps and stuff. Like, you know, when I was growing up hunting with him, like he always had, you know, a compass with a laminated USGS map in my backpack. And from age 7, he was like teaching me how to, you know, use it and know where I am and all these things, you know, before we had GPSs in our phones with downloaded maps and all this crazy technology. But yeah, I owe it all to my dad, all to my uncles, who taught me how to hunt and taught me to love the outdoors. And you know, guys like you, Nate, who instilled that in me in the years following that. And yeah, it's just kind of funny how like I grew up doing that, and then kind of like, you know, as I got older, I got like really into baseball, and that was like a huge chunk of my life from, you know, junior high, middle school, high school, and through all the way through college. And then kind of in college, I just got really into this whole photography adventure kind of, you know, that first just a hobby and then an obsession. And then I was very blessed and fortunate enough that it kind of turned into an actual job. So, yeah.
Yeah. So with all that said, let's introduce what you do. Cause I bet you some of the, we need to back up just a little bit. So you are a professional, videographer and photographer in the outdoor industry. And, we don't need a name drop here, but it's nice to know who you've worked with and some of your films that are on YouTube and things like that.
Yeah. So, my main kind of focus, this last 4 to 5 years, like I said, I've just been incredibly blessed, to be really just like doing what like my dream is, you know, or was back then, of just like, you know, when I very first got into photography, was just doing the outdoor stuff, adventures, and, just like capturing these cool moments and stories. But yeah, for the last like 4 to 5 years, I've been really fortunate enough to work with brands in the hunting industry, especially. Some brands are those like Leupold, Go Hunt, Mountain Ops, done some stuff with Sitka, just to name a couple. But like I said, I've just been super beyond blessed, you know, just for all these opportunities and you know, I'm still at the end of the day, just a small town kid from Southern Oregon. You know what I mean? Like, it still doesn't feel real some days.
who has a sense of, and your dad helped put that in you, of this adventure and, mm-hmm. and strength too. That's another thing too, is, your dad at one time in his life used to, push cows across the Cascades, didn't he?
Yep. Oh yeah. Yeah. He used to drive cattle. Like, I think it was like 70 some miles. Like, I can't remember the name of the ranch. It might've been the C2 ranch.
Yeah.
I want to say. But yeah, when he was a young man, kind of like early, you know, it would have been college age. He didn't end up going to college until later in his 20s. But, you know, in his early 20s, he was driving cattle and doing some pretty gnarly stuff. You know, I can't imagine doing that. I mean, I think it'd be fun, but I'd be like, dang, that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
But yeah, my dad's my idol.
Yeah, he's a pretty hardcore guy. I play basketball with him still, and I haven't played for a while with him, but it's been within the last few years, and he's still pretty hardcore.
Oh yeah, no, he's passionate. He gets after it.
Uh huh. He gets on it. But yeah, so that's kind of one of the things that I wanted to bring you on here is talk about some of the stuff that you've done, you know, in the outdoor industry. Your films are well known in the outdoor industry. I mean, there are a lot of people, you know, out there shooting films, but I don't know. There's a handful of guys, and you're in that handful of guys that are shooting some amazing, amazing quality things.
I appreciate that, Nate. Like I said, I just feel blessed, and yeah, it's been an awesome, not only like just outlet for creativity and just like passion for, you know, looking for these stories to tell, like in the hunting industry. I just really feel like it's my calling right now in this season of my life. Like, you know, just getting to rub shoulders and learn from some of the greatest hunters I've ever met. And, you know, not only that, just like incredible humans, and just learn really super valuable life lessons, from, you know, how to handle success, how to handle failure, how to handle adversity, and just how to, like, you know, for lack of a better term, just like be a man out there and like, you know, have to deal with just some pretty gnarly decisions at times. Like, you know, we got this huge weather system, or, you know, we got to make this like kind of like big decision, like if we cross this river or not, or how we're going to do that. And, you know, just, I've had to really grow up a lot the last few years. And I think hunting has definitely helped accelerate that.
Yeah.
And I'm super grateful for that.
I think that, so that kind of moves us into my next kind of question. And I know that you're a very, insightful person, and you think a lot about what you're doing. You don't do anything without thought put into it.
And sometimes too much.
Yeah. How do you think, and being around the hunting and being around some of the adventure, I mean, so some of the stuff that you film is adventure that's beyond, you know, what a lot of people do, really. And some of that stuff, how do you feel that spiritually aligns up with who we are as men, or even as just hunters?
Yeah. I mean, to kind of like reference, like one of my favorite books that I've ever read, I believe it's John Eldridge's book, Wild at Heart. Like, you know, men were, you know, designed, like God created them like in the wilderness, like before the garden, you know, like we're all kind of designed with like that wildness, you know, in us. Like, and even though now we like live in cities and have all these amenities and, you know, have like a real, you know, the most control of our realities that, you know, humans have ever had in their lives. Like, you know, like Nate and I, we spent a lot of time on the mountain talking about this, you know, like on our elk hunt a few years ago, just like the fact that we, you know, if we're a little bit cold, we just turn up the heat a little bit, you know, in our car, in our house, or, you know, just any sort of like discomfort, like we can pretty much shoo it away or not have to face it. And that's one of my favorite things about hunting, is it just really, you really just have to surrender to the reality that you're in, whatever that is. Like, you know, sometimes it's an awesome reality and sometimes it's not so awesome. And, you know, like some of my favorite conversations I've ever had, you know, in the last, you know, 4 to 5 years of just being pretty much just totally immersed in hunting and in the hunting community, is just like the conversations you and I have had about just like how hunting really is a true form of worship. And that it can take so many different forms. You know, there's like the communal aspect, you know, just, you know, having that camaraderie, brother, iron sharpen iron moments, you know, doing whatever you can for that person, you know, sacrificing your time, your body, your sweat equity, like all these things, or, you know, or even getting a call late at night and being like, hey, I got a bull down. I need some help packing out. And, it's just so funny how, like, a lot of times we're just like, oh, like, yeah, I'll do whatever. And I'll drive 7 hours to help you through the night, not get any sleep. But, it's just such an interesting kind of dichotomy. Cause I feel like sometimes, like, in normal life, we'll be more shy to drop everything to, maybe help somebody or, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of rambling at this point. There's just so many little things.
Yeah.
You'll spend a week on a mountain with somebody and you maybe I won't really have met them, or knew them before that hunt. But that at the end of that 5-6 days, like, each other and you've been through some stuff.
Yeah.
And like, there's just not a lot of things in our modern world that like give us that,
right,
that a taste of that, like, true friendship, true bond with another human being.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously with the Lord being, in his creation, his place that he's designed perfectly, that reflects him, reflects the sinful nature of this world. The whole story, the whole meta narrative.
Right. Right. Yeah. one thing that jumps out with me when you're talking meta narratives, was when we went into that little bowl with all that, dead blow. And you think about that dead blow. I mean, that was some of the worst dead blow that I know in Oregon. That's some of the worst stuff that I've been
through. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that place was gnarly.
Well, it's because it's, lodgepole, and all the stickers are off of it. And then that stuff has sat up there and almost turned into rock. So it's sharp as can be. And anyhow, that's a truth that you have to deal with. And then when you start dealing with that truth, you start thinking about why that dead blow's there, and it all comes from the original sin. That's what created death on earth. And so when we start looking at that kind of stuff, and then you could walk through it and start going, okay, this is what it meant when I had to toil for my food, right? Because that's what God said. And so it brings you right back to, it's one thing to read that stuff, and it's another thing to live it. And
amen. 100%.
And there's very few things on earth that, especially we humans that live in, like, the Western, culture, most people won't put themselves in those situations to live through that truth. So I think hunting does that. So does being in the military. The military was another place where, you could go out on one trip when I was in the Coast Guard with a crew, go through everything that happened on that trip, saving a boat or whatever, and people falling in the water, whatever it was. And then you come back with some of those people I still talk to today, so it's the same thing. I think Jordan Peterson said it the best, as he said that men especially, but women as well, people, have to have some kind of responsibility to have mission. And to have that, you have to have diversity, or not diversity, but something hard to happen to you.
Adversity.
Yes. So that's it's kind of interesting when we look at the hunting side of things. And that's honestly what the Life Outdoors was formed for. That's what we came into, is because we've learned so much out there away from all the fake stuff that we've made to make ourselves comfortable, so we don't have to deal with the truth. And I think dealing with the truth is one of the things that points us back to God.
100%.
And I think you hunters out there, for one, I think you hunters out there that maybe, say, well, the church is, the wilderness is my church, or that kind of thing. Or maybe the ones that don't know why they go hunting and they don't attribute it to God at all. I think if you start looking at that kind of stuff and start understanding the lessons that are out there, it helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So the second thing I was going to ask you is, you've been all over the world, you've hunted with several different people, and you've hunted for several different species. It's one of the things that, have you ever been on a sheep hunt yet?
I've been on a couple. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm super fortunate. Yeah.
Dude, do you got any sheep videos out yet?
I have one for sure on Leopold's YouTube channel.
Oh, really?
It's a project hunt, sheep hunt. Yeah, I can send you the link after this.
Yeah. Why don't we link those? So if you could give me links, I'm going to link them in the show notes. So everybody listening to this, go check out Luke's work in the show notes. It's amazing. And just the storylines and just the way that Leopold set that whole hunt stuff up that they did is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I love their project hunt series. That project is such a cool idea.
But
easily some of my favorite projects of the year have been those ones.
Yeah.
Just the stories and the people I've gotten to meet on those trips has just been awesome. Cause they're just like, you know, normal guys, just like you and me. And, you know, they just happen to get selected for this, you know, this kind of, you know, quote unquote sweepstakes. But, you know, it's just so much more than that. You know, it's just an awesome chance to get to know them and spend time with them and just like, kind of just like, pour my heart out for a week with them with the camera and just see what we come away with. You know, sometimes it's, you know, we come away just, you know, licking our wounds. Sometimes it's been just an incredible story.
Right.
There's actually, I just finished up working on, this next year's one. There was an elk hunt in Wyoming with a guy named Cody Austin, and it's probably my favorite one yet. And I'm really excited for that one to go out.
Right on. Yeah. I can't believe I missed the sheep hunt. Cause that's my thing is, sheep or something I don't know if I'll ever get to do, but it's something that's on the top of my list of something that I want to experience is a sheep hunt. Maybe maybe not even shoot one, but be experienced around them and chasing them. But
I was gonna say the thing about sheep hunt, like for me, I've been fortunate enough to go on three or four of them now. It's just where they live is just insane. I know everyone says that, but like that's really like the biggest for me, like, you know, if I ever am lucky enough to have the opportunity, like that's going to be the biggest thing I would like is just to have that pursuit. Cause I don't know, like, it's kind of like, for me, I think elk is definitely my favorite and might always be my favorite, but the places those sheep live and how they live and just, you know, how beautiful they are on a rock, just looking down on you. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah. That was going to be the question I was going to ask is what your favorite animal to hunt was and what your favorite type of hunt is.
Yeah. I don't know. It's so hard to say. Like if I can only pick one, it would definitely be like elk in the rut with a bow.
Yeah.
But I mean, not far behind that. Like, I don't know. I would probably say like mule deer or honestly blacktail. I had a really fun time last year in Oregon on that blacktail hunt
with my buddy
Hunter McWaters. Like we got to see a lot of deer and just watching them rut and and it's obviously where I'm from, so there's like that emotional connection I have to, you know, hunting some of my old stomping grounds. But yeah, I don't know, I those are definitely up there for me too.
You guys killed some dandies too.
We got very blessed. I'm not sure how that happened because we both went into that being like, yeah, we're just going for opportunity. You just, you know, the first real legal buck we probably see, we're probably going to give it a crack. And yeah, we just got really blessed.
Yeah.
I still don't really fully know, but
thank God the legal bucks were huge.
I know. Yeah. Actually, my parents just picked up my buck from the taxidermist. I'll just see a picture.
Right on.
Yeah. I cannot wait to have him in my house.
Yeah, that's one thing that I don't have is a big blacktail. And part of it is I've been hunting them with a trad bow for years, and that makes it a little bit rough. I've seen, I tell you, though, it's so neat to be out there in the woods during the rut because, as you know, and I've seen a ton, and I've got pictures of a bunch at 50 yards that I couldn't shoot with my bow, and that's how it goes. But this year, I put in for a mule deer tag, but if I don't get it, I will definitely be in the woods for blacktails. And I'm packing a compound bow this year. So
nice. Yeah, I saw that. I saw your Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. The funny thing is, all you got to do after people known you for a while and they know that you've packed a trad bow for almost ever, the minute you say that you're going to shoot a compound, stuff just starts coming your way. I don't know what it is. I feel like they were all Sith and they were trying to get me come over to the dark side or something. But no, really what happened is, Luke, is Gage and I got so frustrated last year elk hunting. We both had recurves. And we started getting after each other, like, watch your wind, and you do this and you do that, and we just stopped. We were chasing a bull for about 4 hours, and it was over 300 inches. I don't know how big it was,
mm-hmm.
but it was over 300 inches easily, and we just stopped and we said, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here? This is not what this should be about. And we had opportunities. We were in elk every day, you know, and we started asking ourselves, why are we packing a recurve? You know, we could have filled our freezers.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us could have filled our freezers pretty easily with the compound. You know, that 35, 40 yard shot out of a compound's not really much. Out of a trad bow, it could be the difference between, you know, wounding something and killing it. So,
so that's
what was holding us back. And, we felt really selfish by being out there with a stick bow, trying to prove something to ourselves or I don't know what it was, but, I swore this year that that's not going to happen. I'm going to give myself the best chance I can to bring home meat. You know, we've spent all this time, effort, money, and time away from wives and family. We owe it to them to bring something back. So,
yep.
In the end of the day, yeah,
it's,
we're hunters.
It's unique how convictions, you know, kind of all hit us at different seasons and times.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, you know, especially like in the microcosm of that being like hunting, like kind of like my conviction I had this last year is like, I need to stop passing up on elk, you know, cause I'm hunting with a compound bow, and I've been hunting. This is my third season hunting. And every year I've passed either cows or, you know, spike or a raghorn trying to like, you know, shoot a branch antler, you know, mature bull.
Right.
And I've had shots. Like I had two shots in Idaho at both a 5 and a 6 point. And I just missed both of them, hit branches. And, you know, before, you know, in earlier in the hunt, I had, you know, I have a video on my phone this year from day one here in Idaho. I had two raghorns sparring at 40 yards.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I'm going to get one this year, no doubt. Like, I'm going to get a big one. And I had to eat my words hard because I had two chances. And my wife was there for both chances over my shoulder and saw me miss both of them. And that was my biggest conviction this year. I was just like, you know what? Any elk with a pulse next year, dying.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to have fun. And I owe it, like I said, like you said, I owe it to my wife, my family to bring home the meat. I already spend so much time away from them, you know, with my job.
Right.
Like, you know, the big bulls, they'll come. Yeah. I'm not worried.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you know, what brought me back too is it wasn't very long ago, probably even 100 years ago, where you depended on what you went out and killed. That's why we were hunters, you know? And if we're going to be hunters now, what's changed? if you really think about it, what's changed? It's just us. But at the end of the day, that's what we are as hunters. Mm-hmm. We're providers, and we should provide. So everyone's
at a different stage in their journey, you know, and that could look like anything. Like some people might be like, you know what, I've had all the success. I've shot all the elk and deer I've ever wanted to shoot. Now I want to try the trad bow, you know, and do that. You know what I mean? Or, hey, I want to, you know, it really, like, I just try and be like, or say, you know, it could be anyone's conviction at any given time to do what they want. Cause like hunting is a pastime. Hunting is very personal and deeply personal. And I don't think it's wise to prescribe, you know, certain things, like certain convictions to the whole,
right, to everybody.
Yeah.
So like if my freezer was full, the trad bow is going to be with me all the time, you know. That's the difference. Yeah. And the same with, you know, a lot of people that are after like a big bull. So somebody's shot a lot of raghorns, they still have, you know, an elk and a half left in the freezer. Of course, why wouldn't you go after a big bull? You know, why wouldn't you make your season longer? Why wouldn't you make it harder so you could experience more? You know, those are the kind of things I think are a personal thing between you and the Lord, basically. But yeah, we just, like Gage said here the other day, he was griping about how much hamburger costs because he hasn't bought hamburger in like 3 years.
Oh yeah.
You know, because that's all they eat. They eat deer and elk and bear. That's all they eat for hamburger. You know, they'll buy steaks and stuff, but for hamburger, that's all they eat. So yeah, that's the reasoning behind switching to the compound. And rifles. Shoot, I'm hunting bears with rifles, so it's, and I think that, you know, I'm doing it out of also a conviction of I can't sit back and complain about all the predators in Oregon if I don't try to do something about it. And
exactly.
So I think once I get one of those out, you know, like if I get the spring bear and a fall bear, or I get the fall bear, my second bear, I'll probably do with a bow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah. I think I'm going to come to Oregon for a fall bear.
Perfect.
Really thinking about it. I did draw a spring bear tag, but life's just been pretty dang crazy this spring and past month and a half. So I just don't think I'm going to make it over this year, unfortunately. I was really wanting to.
Yeah. But
I'll probably just hunt here local in Idaho. I got some buddies who know some good spots. And I went out 2 years ago and did some hunting here and found a good little area too, not too far from my house.
Yeah, fall bear is really fun. We, I, you know, right by my house, I see him just ride my bike. So all summer long. Wow. Oh, yeah. Yeah, up here at Butte Falls, there's so many bears. And then if you know the little spots that they hang out to eat, it's all about food, right? That's what they key on. So there's one spot here that's within probably 3 miles of the house, and I've seen 4 bears off my bike in there. So one of them was a stud. I recorded one of them, and I stopped and yelled, "Hey, bear!" And he was walking away from me when I yelled it. I don't know if you've ever seen the video. I'll post it somewhere. But I yelled at him, "Hey, bear!" And he just stopped, looking straight down away from me, like, what was that, you know? and then I'm like, oh, he didn't run off. And so he just turned around. I didn't have a pistol or anything with me. I was just on my bicycle. And he turned and squared up with me. And I was like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah, no.
So anyhow, finally I yelled enough and talked to him enough. He finally decided to leave, but he wasn't gonna leave there at first. So, but that was probably at 100 yards. It would have been really easy with a rifle to shoot him.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a fun little thing. And you know, some of the high mountain huckleberries, when the huckleberries come on in August, that's really good time for bears. You just go up and listen. You know how everybody glasses for bears in some places? Well, we just go up in the huckleberry patches and you just listen. Get up on a high spot and listen. You'll hear them.
That's cool. Yeah, I've never been on a true like fall bear hunt. I've only ever done the spring hunting for them.
I've been fall bear hunting just playing mainly. Just getting out. Honestly, I fall bear hunt and then I go looking for elk. And if I would just key in on the bear spots, because I run into them all the time while I'm down there, you know, and if I would just key in on the bear spots, I'm sure you could shoot a nice one out of there. But
right on.
No, it's a lot of fun. So with that said, so elk, I think we're on the same train there, because it's just something to call a bull in and have him slobbering in your face and all that stuff. And
yep.
The diversity of ground that they're in, right, and all the things that are with elk. And then I'm partial to Cascade bulls even over, you know, Rockies or the Roosevelts. And people say they're Roosevelts up in the Cascades, but I think they're a mix between the two.
I mean when we were hunting those bulls 2 years ago, I mean, though, like, I still want to get back over there again and give it another crack, because I mean, after seeing just some of the bulls that are in there and the quality, like, and the challenge, too, kind of going back to, like, you know, convictions or challenges and stuff like that. Like, that is one challenge I love. Like I dedicated 2 years to trying to kill this one bull that I know I was showing you pictures of and stuff. Yeah. And it was just, I learned so much in that, like, 2 year span. Like, even though I was unsuccessful, like, I learned so much about those elk in particular, but just elk hunting in general and scouting and, you know, trying something and failing, trying something again and failing, and then ultimately failing and learning from that failure.
Oh, that was a lot of work put into all that, you know? And
yeah,
I think once you do connect after all that work, it's just, it's a pretty amazing experience.
Yeah. Yeah. But where they live, especially, like, just that terrain is just so unique.
It is.
Especially in Oregon. But yeah, I mean, even across the West, like I really just have like a soft spot in my heart for like the Cascades, and just that whole area in Southern Oregon just is so unique and diverse. And, you know, just the from the elevation change to the vegetation change, and just like how you can just find these little pockets that are just like, you just feel like you're, you know, millions of miles from anything.
Yeah.
And you're really not.
Right. Right. Like where you were hunting those bulls down there, and then you came up, what was that? Probably, across the way, it's probably 40 miles, right?
Yeah, if
you're able to fly, and the stuff, the habitat just changed like dramatically.
Yeah.
It's
so cool.
It is. And so I, and then we go another 40 miles as the crow flies, and it changes dramatically again. You're in sagebrush and junipers, and it's just nutty as all get out that we have that diversity within just, you know, a gas tank away from us around here.
Yeah. No, Southern Oregon's super special in that regard. And that's why I love going up there. And just, you know, I really took a lot of it for granted growing up. I just never really thought, you know, much. I thought that's what everyone had. You know, everyone had access to terrain like that, and to, you know, just wilderness like that. And, you know, going up to, like, you know, for instance, like Union Creek to get a Christmas tree.
Yeah,
just like, oh, right. Yeah, everybody goes up to this,
yeah, no,
you know,
big
incredibly,
deal.
Incredibly beautiful, picturesque, yeah, mountain roads with perfect, you know, V-line trees along, yeah, the road. Like, everyone gets to see that and do that. And it's like, no, that's like really rare.
Yeah. 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 It's, yeah. I came to that realization. I got shipped down to Texas one time, and it was not a good place at Texas either. And I had to stay there for about 3 months. And, I was complaining, 'cause I'd have to go back over to the base over in Klamath, and that drive going over 140. I was like, oh man, I got to go over 140 again. Went down there, mm-hmm, for 3 months, came back, and I never complained about that drive again.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh my gosh, look what, drive. Yeah, look what I get to do every time I go, you know, have to go to work. I get, yeah, to go through this beautiful place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's all about perspective. And sometimes you just need to leave your little bubble to really get, you know, the true perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. To get out of that mindset of just the dreary same old, right. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I kind of, the same thing. I grew up in Chiloquin, Oregon, and I grew up, with just miles of playground behind me. And then I had to move over. I moved over in the Rogue Valley and didn't have that anymore. And I thought to myself, I could remember being a kid in Chiloquin going, man, I just wish I was over in the Valley and had something to do with people. And, mm-hmm, then now I'm like, wow, what an idiot kid I was. I had the whole world.
Yeah.
But no, it's funny. That was one of the questions I was going to ask you too, is, you know, you've traveled all over the place. You talked about the animals, but what about the, what is your favorite kind of terrain that you've been in? What struck out with you? What kind of still sticks in you that you're like, man, that's, I want to go back.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Like for hunting specifically, I mean, New Zealand just was so captivating. Just the kind of like what we're talking about, like just the true diversity of what it has is just unbelievable. From, like, you know, tropical crystal blue water beaches to glacial fjord, mountain, Alps things, like just jaw dropping Middle Earth mountains. And then you have these beautiful, like, you know, lakes and tussocks and just these kind of like great plains, you know, just big rolling hills. And, you know, obviously the animals they have there, like the red stag, the tar, right.
Yeah.
You know, just stuff you dream about, you know, and stuff that's like, you know, if you never were able to draw or, you know, have the finances for a sheep hunt, which is most of us, like,
right,
you know, going over there is kind of like, you know, a lot of people say it's like a quote unquote poor man's sheep hunt, you know, 'cause, right, all you gotta do is get, right, there. There's, yeah, no tags or licenses to get. Granted, getting a rifle there is hard. That's a hassle, but, you know, if you just go with a bow, it's, yeah, not that big a deal. But yeah, I definitely really want to go back there one day,
yeah,
some way or somehow, even if it's just filming, like, that's enough for me. 'Cause,
right,
I don't know. I find I get just as much enjoyment and fulfillment, truly. I know it's not the same for everybody, but yeah, I don't know. I love filming and love telling those stories,
putting the story on film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Passing on that drive that's in us. I do, mm-hmm, too. I love to film. I almost film more than I actually carry anything. So And there's a cam over there too. That makes it nice.
Yes. Yeah. And you've met him. Good old Cam Anderson. The friendship that him and I have cultivated over the years, just from talking on Instagram for, you know, a couple of years from like 2019 on, to him being like, yeah, I want to come out to Oregon and hunt the Cascades. I'm like, all right, you know, it's going to be pretty brutal. And he's just like, oh, I'm here for it, man. And yeah, dude, that just speaks to the quality of guy and friend that he is. And, you know, this is the time we got to spend on that hunt. And yeah, it was brutal. And it would make most sane people be like, are there even elk here? Yeah, you know, like question everything.
Right,
but,
right.
But no, I'm just joking. We did see elk and we had a really good time. And I think he had like nine bee bites or bee stings by the end of it.
Yeah.
Because he's wearing shorts the whole time.
Dude, and we were just grinding so hard. And to watch him that last day, we're coming down the canyon and he had the huge pack with all of his camera gear.
Yeah.
Just running across there, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so old watching this.
No, Cam's one of the best dudes. I freaking love that guy.
Yeah, he's crazy. John too. John was so much fun out there.
Yep. But John's like a brother to me.
Yeah.
I'm actually hunting with him in Idaho this year. He actually got a really, really solid archery elk tag here in Idaho.
Like right
for
on.
A pretty premier unit. So I'm gonna hunt with him, and yeah, it'll be me, him, and Alexa hunting together.
Right on.
It's gonna be a lot of fun. I think I have a really good feeling about this year.
You guys will have some more biltong. Is it biltong? Is that what? How you pronounce that?
Yeah, biltong. I think it's like all African, like jerky or something like that. Yeah.
All I know
that
is
sounds good.
It's amazing. But when you rip that out of your backpack, I'm thinking, man, this guy's already carrying a quarter with him, and he forgot it in his backpack from his last hunt. I was like, what is that? And we started cutting hunks off of it. It was like, oh, that is amazing.
Yeah, I actually need to order some more of that. That stuff is unbelievable.
Well, the stuff that you had too, I've had some since then, and that was different than what I've had. That was, you know, that was a big slab, and the stuff that I get, they've already cut off. So I think having that in a big slab still and then cutting your own off makes it even that much better. Yeah, so that was one of, New Zealand's pretty cool. So I think we're almost to 45 minutes here, and I want to be able to get in and get some tips from you on how to get into the, because we have a guy that's starting to film for us now, and he's wanting to film for a long time, and he's talented. But a guy like him, how would he get into the industry? How would he be able to break into it? Do you have any tips on that?
Yeah. I'd say, like, at least speaking for me, like, I think what really helped me was I took a lot of photos and videos for a long time and just did a lot. I just experimented a lot of trial and error, and like really just like developed it as a hobby for many years before I even was even approached by a company to do it for money or do it for a job or anything like that. Like that's kind of one thing I always tell anyone who's looking to kind of take it another step further, or like really just, or even just take the first step, like diving in, be like, I really want to try this, for example, you know. And that's just one thing I always say, like, you know, cause if it does, you know, turn into a job, and if it does lead to, you know, a whole career and life, or who knows, you know, like you really want to have that good, solid foundation of, you know, why you do it, and hopefully that you love it, because that's going to help carry you through, you know, like on the mountain, for example, like in the hunting industry specifically, like those moments that suck or those moments of like true adversity where you're like, dude, I don't know if I want to do this right now. Like I'm so tired, or, you know, or this happened, or that happened. Just having that, like that solid foundation of like, you know, I think there's no substitute for time and passion. And if you can have the years of just doing it cause you love it, that's just going to help propel you through any of the adversities you're going to face, whether that's with a client or with a true physical adversity on a hunt, or maybe even both.
Like, right.
You know what I mean? Or just like with anything in life, just having that solid foundation that can't be shaken. You know, just like, you know, like, you know, as we as believers, like just having like that faith in Christ and faith in the Lord that, you know, whatever is going to be thrown my way, you know, just being able to rest in that and to be just firmly planted as, you know, all hell is breaking loose, you know, around you. It's just so invaluable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, I think that's probably the best advice he could give to anybody is understanding that, you know, you got to like it. I see mm-hmm. so many people getting into things and then they turn it into a job and then like guiding. I've seen guides mm-hmm. come and go and it's, they think it's going to be great and they see all the glamour, but they don't see the times that you're picking flies out of people or having to figure out how to get them somewhere where they could use the restroom or all those mm-hmm. goofy things that you never think about that really suck.
Yeah, no, it really transcends like all like vocations, passions, jobs, you know, part-time, full-time, whatever. Like you just really like, especially if it's something that, you know, has that ability to be something you truly love, like just having that foundation is just so crucial.
Yeah. Yeah. Anthony is that's what he told me when he started filming. He says he just wants to film and he wants to film people doing stuff that they're going to use. And and I told him, yep, that's good. You're going to do that until somebody sees your work and they're going to grab you.
Yeah.
And I said, if they do, you better just go. Don't have any loyalties with us. So,
but yeah, that's awesome. How'd you meet Anthony?
So I met him actually through Joshua, which is married to the Kimmels, and he worked with him. So they through the grapevine, they got to talking, and Anthony was like, "Yeah, man, I he's gone to a couple film schools and stuff, and he's like, I just need somebody to film." And so Josh told me this like a couple months ago, and I finally found him on Instagram, and I saw some of his work on Instagram, and I was like, "Whoa!" So yeah, if you guys want to film, like, you know, this is what we could do. And he was like here the next morning, 15 minutes early, waiting for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's a pretty fun guy. He's
yeah. That sounds like the kind of guy you want, but also the kind of guy you want to be.
Yeah, yeah, he's the guy that you want with you, and he's the guy that you want. That's going to be out there filming, but at the same time with a nonprofit, he's probably not going to be there as long as, as we'd love to have him. It's something will probably happen and they'll find us filming. So, but, I don't know if you guys have, if you've seen our last YouTube video, he filmed that and edited.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I'll definitely check both. That out after this.
Yeah, he did both. One last thing here. So, you know, we've covered all this from how you got into it, what your favorite stuff is. Now I think I want to hear probably one of the hardest times that you've had since you started this. And it could be, you know, the hardest time, just because of where you were or the circumstances or, you know, the elk, you know, getting away and you had to chase or whatever. But do you know of the hardest thing that you've done since you've started this?
I've definitely had a couple. I've had some physical ones for sure. Just like briefly off the top of my head, I had a fall in a frozen glacial river in New Zealand. And it sprained my knee pretty bad. I was out there with Brian Call and Ryan Lampers, and I had to stay in the hut for 2 days, two and a half days. And just heal up and rest up and take who knows how much ibuprofen, probably a bad amount, probably an unhealthy amount.
It's probably good that it was cold.
Yeah, no, it was cold. Like it was tough. I mean, I've never truly been alone, like by myself completely in the wilderness, like zero service.
Yeah.
Zero anyone. I mean, luckily, like it was kind of trippy because, you know, there was no predators in New Zealand. So like,
right.
It was just interesting, like being there at night. And just be like, you know, there's no bears, there's no cougars, there's no anything.
Right.
Like no wolves. Like it's kind of a trippy like thought process, especially having grown up out here.
Yeah, you know, in the West. There's like, everything.
you're always kind of looking over your shoulder. But yeah, that was a pretty tough moment. Like I feel like the Lord really had me grow up a lot on that trip, but also just in those 2.5 days in the hut, just being, you know, being just me and him.
Yeah.
You know, and right. And the creek to drink water out of.
Right.
Like that was that was it, you know? And, I think a lot of people have never and may never ever have an experience like that where they're just truly alone with their own thoughts. Yeah. And that's a scary thing.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, like pretty much I had a couple of sermons downloaded actually. And I just listened to those on repeat and listened to some worship music and just basically just kind of like slept through the days. But yeah, that was like I call it kind of like a gauntlet of sorts, like where I really feel like I had to grow up a lot.
Yeah.
Just because of that experience. And yeah, because it's like in a lot of ways, like it was like my dream to go there and all these things and to have that kind of like be derailed, you know, because of an injury that was out of my control, you know, I just had to kind of surrender to that. But yeah, the rest of the hunt ended up being great. We went back after that little stint, rested for 2 days in a hotel, like, you know, offloaded SD cards, cleaned skulls, and then we went back out and hunted hard for 4 more days and got 2 more tar. So, yeah, still good friends with those guys.
Yeah.
Still have a great relationship with them. Cool. And yeah, that's probably like the biggest physical challenge.
Right.
That I would say just because it was like an injury and like a true, like,
sounds really... like a spiritual challenge too. It really does.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It was 100%. Yeah. And I was like, that was honestly like the more of the emotional pain of it hurt more than the physical pain.
Yeah.
I was just,
yeah,
I felt like I was like, dude, I'm like not able to do my job. And I was just wrestling with things. And
right.
You know, luckily those guys were like, dude, just rest up. Like we're chilling. Like, you know, we got a camera and it's no big deal. We already had bowls down. Like, you know, it was just extra at that point waiting for the helicopter to come pick us up. So it wasn't that big of a deal.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. But then the Lord just really used that experience to kind of like, in some ways humble me. But in other ways just to kind of speak to me and maybe slow me down a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was probably the biggest physical challenge I've had. But yeah, I mean, like on any hunt, there's been a lot of physical challenges.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like one I always kind of go to now, it's more recent, was 2 years ago. I was out with Brady Miller. And we thought we could outrun a snowstorm at 3 a.m.
Yeah, I've seen that video. I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah. And turns out we couldn't.
Yeah.
And we left our backpacks on the mountain with about $50,000 worth of gear, optics, rifles, cameras, all our puffy jackets, our backpacks, like all our food, stoves. I mean, literally everything. And we ran, you know, 5 miles down this dirt road that was just getting pounded with snow, thinking that we could just, you know, get to my vehicle and drive to get our stuff.
But, right.
You know, in that time frame, it already snowed too much and that road was snowed in.
Dude.
But yeah, I mean, luckily we went back there 2 days later and all our stuff was completely fine. And cause we put the pack covers, just like those little, you know, nylon rain covers over them, and they were totally fine, totally dry. And yeah, just like that relief was just like,
thank God you had the rain covers.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. All the cameras, the spotters, rifles, everything was totally fine.
No way.
But yeah, what a learning experience. Never think you can outrun a storm.
Yeah. Especially over there. That was in Montana, right?
Oh, that was Colorado.
Colorado. Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing. I mean, the Rockies.
Right.
Yeah. In November. Yeah. Anything can happen. And it can happen extremely fast.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I've had that happen to me in Alaska.
I don't know. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. I'm just saying that's happened to me in Alaska before, but not in Oregon.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was a crazy experience. And that was like the biggest takeaway from that. I was like, I will never do that. Cause like, I mean, I got lucky. We happened to have some extra clothes in my truck that I just happened to bring. But yeah, all of our stuff was there. And everything we know, but it was a big learning lesson. So now me and Brady just look back and laugh at it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
We're just like, never again.
Right. We learned so much from that. We won't do that again.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure I'll still do dumb mistakes and I'll still be learning. That's one of the other things too I love about hunting is just, you're always a student of it, always learning.
Yeah.
You can never know everything.
Yeah.
And that's why, that kind of goes with photography too and video. Like, you can never truly fully know everything. And there's always something
so good.
new to learn. And, just being constantly humbled, they're just seeing, a shot or a film that someone puts out and be like, dude, that was insane. Or how'd they do that?
Like
just
that new Sitka film. Holy smokes. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That raised the bar. Yeah. I just watched that this morning.
I did too.
Phenomenal job. That should be like the example of what hunting film should be aspiring to be.
Yep.
Like kudos to everyone involved on that job.
Yeah. Was that a hunting film?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I almost
do you want to cry?
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool, Luke. I won't leave you here too long. I mean, I won't keep you here too long. I'm going to probably jump off of here, but I really appreciate you coming on, and we're going to have to do this again.
Definitely. Hopefully. Maybe in person. I'll film
Dude, I really want to hunt with you again. Yeah.
I know. We'll make that happen soon. Like I need to get back over there this year. Like I said, I'm going to try and get over for fall bear.
Yeah.
And then I really would like to try and do blacktail again, at least.
Yeah.
But we'll see. My dad's got a really nice elk tag here in Idaho. Oh, I'm super pumped to hunt with him.
Are you going
to
film any of that?
I think I am. Yeah. I haven't told him that, but I think I am.
Dude, we could use one of your films in the film tour. It would be just fantastic.
Yeah, we'll make that happen. But yeah, I've been thinking about it and praying about it, and I just think, you know, I think I should, because, like, I don't know, I had a really good friend of mine, his grandpa passed away, and they had all this incredible hunting footage of them, you know, hunting in Idaho with horses, you know, going back to like the 80s, 90s, just with, like, you know, VHS tapes and stuff like that. And, like,
so good.
His grandson put together this video of all this footage of their hunts, like,
dude,
you know, for their funeral. And I was just like, dude, this is what, like, hunting films need to be. Like, just like the feelings I got watching that. I'm like, I don't even know this guy. And I'm like, this is what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So that's why I'm like, at the very least, I'll bring a camera. At the very least.
There's so much more to hunting than pulling a trigger, huh?
Amen.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And that's what's going to keep hunting alive, is just more people realizing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully we could show that through the camera. Right. So hopefully we can show that through everything that we do. Because honestly, I think that's how people will actually get to know who Jesus is, and a lot of people, that may be the only experience they have. And if we could show that to them, man, what a job that's put on us, you know?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Feel blessed when people watch the stuff and tell me, you know, and we're not very big or anything, but you get people that tell you, man, I really like that, and I got this out of it. And you're thinking to yourself, what did God do with that? Here I am thinking that I'm just putting stuff up, and God did something completely different. Is that your husky?
Oh yeah, that's my husky. It's just, I gotta let her in really fast. Sorry to interrupt your beautiful monologue.
No, I'm gonna let you get going. I know you're a busy man, so I'll let you get here. But thanks a bunch, Nate, for coming on.
I was gonna say, thank you so much for having me on, man. I really, like I said, appreciate this opportunity to be on your podcast, and just to catch up as old friends and talk about a lot of stuff, you know. It's just so refreshing to me, and brings me right back to being on the mountain again with you
in the,
you know, the Cascades and that teepee
in the skunk cabbage.
yep. And all that skunk cabbage, watching Cam, you know, put some ointment on his bee stings
and Gage's tent fall on him in the morning.
Yeah, we need to make more memories soon.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks a bunch, man. We'll have to do this again, and I'm really happy that you came on.
Yeah, thank you, Nate. Thank you so much, Pat.
We'll talk to you later.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to the Life Outdoors podcast. Join the Life Nation by spreading this podcast, or by going over to our YouTube channel, giving us a subscribe, or even by following us on Instagram. All these things help spread the life. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening. Keep living.